flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
There's one thing that will forever change the way you sleep, and it's the softest, 100% organic cotton bedding from Boll & Branch. You'll fall asleep faster, wrapped in the most luxurious comfort. You'll never sleep hot again with airy blankets, cloud-like duvets, and breathable sheets. You'll experience pure comfort on night one and feel your bedding get softer with every wash. Discover the difference with 15% off your first order at BollAndBranch.com with code ODYSSEY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Good afternoon, St. Louis. DGS on KMOX. Happy Thursday to you. We'll be taking a day off tomorrow. No big whoop. Just got some stuff I need to get done and seemed like a good time to do it. So the guys will be taking care of you tomorrow. Again, nothing to see. I'll be back on Monday. Have to talk about the crash in D.C. But I'm just going to say this. It's obviously a tragedy. There's obviously been a mistake, if not a series of mistakes. This kind of stuff is not supposed to happen, hasn't happened in many, many years. And the loss of one life is too much, but the loss of so many dozens of people is just, it's just one of those days. It's just one of those days. I fell asleep early last night, and I woke up at about 2 in the morning and had a text from Ben Boyd. And it was saying, like, this crash, and it was just such a weird, it's like, I'm sleepy, it's Ben Boyd, we're usually just jacking around with each other, and here's about this terrible crash, and so I got up and watched the news. I will say this, in my humble opinion, whether it's Donald Trump or Joe Biden or Pete Buttigieg or Dave Glover, I don't think anyone should be politicizing anything while there are bodies in the water. Full stop. And when you do criticize something as complicated as how did this crash happen, and you make it as simple as DEI hires, I just think that's an injustice. To be able to pin it on that, you'd have to know who made the mistake, that they were a DEI hire, and that they were a DEI hire and they were unqualified.
Right.
Because that's making the assumption that if you're hired under a DEI program, you are not competent. So you'd have to know so many things that are just impossible to know at this point. To me, that's the definition of politicizing something.
Yeah.
When you make a statement that is political without backup. And again, Donald Trump's the one in his administration who's doing it. But if this were still the Biden administration and they were blaming something political at this early stage, in my opinion, you just don't do that. It's not helpful. Yeah. That's all I have to say about it.
Yeah, I'm with you. And in fact, I'd go even further that you shouldn't say anything at all until the investigation's done, if you're in a position of authority, because you don't know until the investigation is completed, when everybody who's charged with that, and there's going to be multiple angles on this, I would assume, right? I mean, the FAA is going to have to look into this. I'm sure the military is going to have their own separate look into this, and they'll probably cooperate. But until you have the results of that, everything is just noise. But unfortunately, we all reward noise. It's what gets all the play. It's what gets all of the airtime.
Sometimes mistakes just happen.
Yes.
And there isn't an underlying reason of, you know, oh, this is a policy thing. That Democrats have this DEI policy and they're the one. And first of all, yeah, sure. OK, I'll concede that maybe once the investigation is done, we will find out what Dave said, that somebody was hired who didn't belong there. They were unqualified. And this is the result of it. There was an air traffic controller or a pilot, whatever. Sure, maybe I'll concede that we could find that out. But there is absolutely no way that at 11:15 today, barely 12 hours after it happened, that you know why it happened. So don't act like you do. And like he said during his press conference, we shouldn't politicize this. And then he said, I have opinions, though. This is not a time for your opinions.
Right.
Let's find out what happened first. Then we can address the problem.
And not to both sides this, but I don't know if you guys saw it. But last night, there was stuff. I don't even know if it's true, but it was trending last night and getting a lot of play from people with big follower counts who engage in this rage engagement, who are saying, in his first days, Donald Trump laid off 100 FAA executives.
Saw that.
I don't know if that's true or not. I haven't seen a legitimate news report.
I don't know if it is either.
Right.
And if he did, there's no evidence that that led to this crash.
Exactly. Right. It's exactly. So this is like, yes, we're picking on Trump for what he did, but I'm just as mad about people that are running with that other thing, too, with no backing or justification or investigation. Like, why are we such children? It's not hard to just wait for the end of the investigation to decide what you think happened.
Rach was showing me some stuff today on Japan, and we're just talking about the Japanese culture, and it's an ancient culture. And she said that one thing that's very different from us is that it's not unanimous and it's not a monolithic society, but in general, they all row their boats in the same direction. Like they kind of want the same thing for the country.
I can't speak like fully on that, but it does seem like that. It just seems like people have the same values and goals.
Whereas we feel, to me personally, having been a divorce attorney, like we're constantly in a state of divorce.
Yeah.
You know, one side's the man, one side's the woman, and they don't like each other. And having been through it before and having watched people just blame everything on the other person and they can do nothing right, that's what it feels like.
But unless I'm just not remembering because I was too young, I don't feel like it was always like this.
No. No,
there's always been.
I'm old enough to remember when it wasn't.
There's always been a push and pull.
Yeah,
because you have two parties that don't see things exactly the same way. But at least there was a. Maybe we disagree on certain topics, but we're all moving in the same direction.
I think that
it's so much worse now.
I could be wrong because I'm remembering a memory of a memory of a memory from decades ago. But it just seemed that we had a better class of politician. A more serious class of politician from top to bottom. There were certainly bad apples, but they worked together and they fought it out behind closed doors. Maybe we didn't know enough, but now I think maybe we know too much. And it's just different. It's just different. And I don't know how we pull out of this divorce situation that we seem to be in, but it makes, in my opinion, everything worse. When good things happen, it makes it less good. When bad things happen, it makes it worse. And it's not serving anyone. And I don't know.
Honestly, I think this sounds terrible, but I think the only thing that really drags us out of it is if something truly awful happens and we all feel it and everybody collectively just says, all right, I don't care about I got to stop with the fighting and the politics. Because of, and I don't know what the thing is.
I don't know, though.
Aliens. But it is. It's,
COVID was awful.
It has
Ronald
to
Reagan
be.
Was right. If an alien species comes from outer space, then we might get them and we might band together for survival.
It would have to be worse than COVID.
I
don't know what it would be. I thought COVID might do it for us at least. There were about 2 weeks in there where I thought, hey, maybe we're all going to pull on the same rope here. And we stopped that pretty quickly. But I honestly don't know what it would be. It would have to be visceral.
Yeah.
It would have to be terrifying. It would have to be something that you can't deny is happening. COVID, there were a lot of people saying, it's just the flu.
Well, and also
but it would
it's
have
very
to be a
different,
thing that is...
Yeah, very different for,
yeah.
You know, different parts of the country, how you experienced it. And I know, like, American quote-unquote unity will always look different than other cultures because, you know, we talk about Japanese culture in Japan, Italian culture in Italy. Well... America has Italian culture in America and Japanese culture in America and Mexican culture and you know English culture and African culture. Like, we are the melting pot. You're always going to have all of these different cultures, all of these different histories all together. So the United States of America does look different. And you said, you know, we are in this divorce. And I mean, kind of jokingly, we were founded on divorce. I mean, that's what we are. And we talked about yesterday, I think it was, the... rugged individualism of the United States, for better or for worse, that made us what we are. And so we are always going to look different than a community, a culture like Japan, where there's that cultural unity. And in the United States, you know, the founding fathers trying to create a system that would accommodate differences and very strong disagreements. And so it's even within our differences, we may differ on a lot of things. Are there certain fundamental beliefs that we have that make us American? One of those is the rights of the individual, and the ability to, you know, freedom of religion, and, you know, if the freedom of speech. So certain fundamental things. It's like, how do we remember that?
We're also sort of founded on skepticism and distrust.
100%. Everybody has been betrayed by their governments.
It's absolutely in our DNA.
Yeah. But for centuries, people coming here, you know, the tired, the poor, the hungry, the persecuted, they all came here because they had been betrayed by their countries, by their governments, by other cultures within their country. And so, yes, 100%, there's that skepticism. But
which isn't healthy, really.
But I do.
There's such a
do
thing
we really
as,
carry the biases though. From our ancestors from 200 years ago? Though
I think things are passed down.
I mean,
I think it's a general cultural.
Yeah. I mean, because none of us have lived that.
No, but I think it's always something different. It's not
it's
distrust of a different government. It's distrust of our government now, and that might have come from the '60s, from the Kennedy thing, and, you know, people believing that we're hiding aliens, and the government killed Kennedy, and I don't know.
But culture influences your values.
Yes,
yeah,
it's all from that.
Your societal fabric will look different. And American societal fabric has always looked different, but we've always had a fabric that does, that is woven together, and it's starting to feel like the seams are pulling apart.
Yeah, there are people that are actively working to do that.
Yep.
I mean, that because they benefit from it one way or another, whether they benefit from it financially or in terms of gaining power. To your question, like what brings us together? I mean, I brought up the Reagan speech to the UN from 1987. Because he said, I occasionally think how quickly our differences worldwide would vanish if we were facing an alien threat from outside this world. So that was the basis of what I'm going. But for us, maybe the more practical, tangible version of that as a country is another Pearl Harbor.
Well,
something where it's officially.
9/11.
Why are we wishing for that?
No, we're not. We're saying that's what it takes, unfortunately.
But would that even work? We have the internet now. And anyone can spout out whatever stupid opinion they want, and then everyone looks at it and takes it seriously. I think a great step forward would be when Donald Trump wants to go on air and say, or, you know, go do his press conference and say it's because of DEI, we all go, that's really stupid, and then we move on with our day. Because focusing on it and then giving him more and more power, which is what CNN has done all afternoon, I don't really care what Trump said. I care about the crash. So give me more information about the crash.
I agree with you about that.
The problem is there's 50% of the people, though, that are hearing that, taking it and running with it and acting on it moving forward.
Yeah, we can ignore it, but half the country's not.
And whether it's that or it's the dumbasses on the other side last night that are doing the 100 FAA people were fired, and that's why... The problem is that there's always that large group of people running with that thing. So if we don't engage, then it just breathes fire on its own and it grows on its own. But I would say, Rach, there's one point in there I think that's a really interesting one is, does the raging back ever even fix anything? Does it even help?
It doesn't feel, I mean,
is it pouring water on the fire or are you just, you know, throwing more fuel?
Yeah, I mean, the first 4 years I was raging pretty hard. And it did nothing for me. I mean, I can have my opinions, but it's just like giving it so much energy every day. It's not worth it to me anymore. And maybe that makes me intellectually lazy, a coward, you know, whatever you want to say. I'm just saying, like, I would rather just look at that, say, that's really dumb. I'll give it more attention if it needs more attention, but I'm willing to just move on from it.
I agree with you. And in my own personal life, I no longer have a news network. I've never really had one, but CNN is usually my default go-to because I always felt like they were the most balanced. But lately, I haven't been watching them at all, really. Even their news product, as opposed to their opinion product, because to me, it feels like, hey, here's the news. Trump did this. Now we're going to spend 15 minutes with a panel telling you why that's so terrible. So I agree with you.
Yeah.
And even if I agree with them, it's not where I want to spend my intellectual life, much less my emotional life.
Right. And I do think it's frustrating that Trump can suck all the oxygen out of the room. But then, right, CNN will devote their coverage to it. And while it is important to follow what the president of the United States is saying, I was watching CNN and it was hours of Trump did this, Trump did that. And then there was a 4-minute segment on how nationwide our schools are failing. 31% of kids across the country can read at grade level. 31%. And talking about how that was worsened by the pandemic, it overwhelmingly hit kids in underserved areas, lower economic zip codes. To me, let's make that 10 hours a day until we can effect some change, and then devote some shorter times, some shorter headlines to Trump. Because I get it. I'm not saying the president isn't important. He is important, and his words matter more than others because he is the president. But that 4-minute segment on the schools, my heart just broke. Our kids can't read.
Our adults can't read.
That's what we should be talking about for 10 hours a day.
54% of adults read sixth grade level or below. 20% of adults in the United States are functionally illiterate. I mean,
it's not good.
No, it's awful.
We clearly need to pay attention to that, but we also can't just say, I'm tired of this other stuff and let's just ignore it. Let's ignore everything the president says because, we're not going to solve anything by paying attention.
No, but that's what I said. No, you have to pay
attention. There's too much.
He's the president.
There's too much and it will affect too many people to ignore it.
No, and I didn't say ignore it. I'm just saying, we don't need 10 hours of all of his quotes. Let's really hammer home the fact that our kids can't read. That broke my heart. Well, how are we going to fix that?
Don't you think he makes comments like that so that the news does fixate for the 10 hours? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, he's an eyeballs guy.
Yes. I mean, I'm not saying totally ignore it either, but I'm just saying whenever you feed into it, that's exactly what he wants. So I would rather make the choice doing what he doesn't want.
Good discussion. Only a couple minutes here. We went long on that first segment for obvious reasons. I'm not the biggest fan of Chris Hayes from MSNBC. I don't really watch MSNBC, but he was featured on a Sunday show, and he's written a book, and I thought it was very interesting. And in his new book, he makes the argument pretty effectively that the most valuable commodity in the world, and certainly in America today, is the attention of the citizens. That our attention is the most valuable commodity that we have and that corporate America wants, which is what a change. It's not our money. It's not our work. It's our attention. It's our eyeballs. It's
literally
our
ears. What Rach was just bringing up. Everything's about getting attention. Man. You think he's right?
Well, attention leads to money.
It feels right.
Right. Well,
you need the attention to get the money.
The attention does lead to the money side.
Oh, sure. That's why they want it.
Right.
Right. But it's that's what we have to sell is our attention. And that's what everyone is going for. And when you're in a market of attention, well, what do you think it's going to do?
Seek attention.
Seek attention. It's exactly right. You're always talking about the rage farming.
I mean, you see it in politics. We see it if you follow sports, you see it the same way. Who are the biggest sports personalities? The attention seekers, the screamers, the yellers, the hot take people, the people that are angry every day.
Same reason that we stop and look at auto accidents. We're just wired that way. Well, you can penetrate any place you go.
Yes, you can. Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam
on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, guys. DGS 133. Happy rainy Thursday to you. I don't know what it is. I've said this to everyone today. I don't know what it is, but I feel like we're all here on a Saturday. It's weird. The only thing different is the rain, and I've worked on many rainy days, but just like walking around today, I'm just like, oh, Amy's here. Look at that.
What do you know?
Chris is here, too. It's weird.
It's the weather. I do.
It's because it's a little darker in the room.
Feels like a Saturday.
And it feels like
weather.
The lights are off because the lights are off when you come in on maybe a weekend.
That, yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe it's as simple as that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Could be. It is really dark day. Let's change the vibe in here a little bit, although I'm very proud of that first half hour we did. Very good discussion. Very balanced, in my opinion. What is an activity that you have engaged in that made you feel alive? Truly alive. I know for Amy.
Yeah.
Walking the ridges in Switzerland will do it.
Or in Banff.
The bear. Seeing when the bear almost ate your face.
The bear made me feel almost dead.
Let me tell you something. Amy was almost a fainting
less
goat.
Less alive and almost dead.
Amy just goes stiff and falls down.
And it knocked me down a notch or two, I will say, which made the Swiss Alps that much better because there are no bears there, which is good.
If the bear had mauled you to death, as sad as I would have been, it would have been great content for like a week.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Could have gotten a lot of mileage out of you being eaten by a bear.
Well.
It would have been a waste for the bear, too, because he would have mauled you, he would have started to eat, and there's just nothing there.
Well, that's why he didn't attack us. It wasn't worth it.
Size job.
I mean, I'm twice as big as Noah, so.
Oh, my God.
Wow. I didn't know that.
That's an appetizer.
Oh, my mom will see pictures of us on the trip and go, how big are you, Amy? She's like, you look like an Amazonian compared to
So she's 2'9"?
Cute. Noah is like 75 pounds, 5 feet tall on a good day.
Wow.
No, she says she's 5'1".
Rach, how about you?
I would say like anytime I've been to the ocean, I just have this indescribable feeling of like, wow, would you look at that? It's just stretching out so far and it just blows my mind every time.
I'm like that in the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
Like once I get past Denver and I see the mountains and especially when there's this one lake I have a tattoo of on my left arm that every time I go to Colorado, I hike and it's a big oval. It takes about 3 hours to do. Gorgeous mountains in the background. And when I took the whole family out there, Marina and the kids and everyone, we did it. And it was in the spring, I believe. Yeah, and it was pretty warm. But then we hit the backside that didn't get as much sun, and it was like waist high snow, which we didn't anticipate.
Uh-huh.
We're all wearing shorts and t-shirts, but just trudging through the snow for a few hundred yards, I don't know. We all still talk about that, you know. And I'm not a big adrenaline junkie. Like, if I really wanted to feel alive, I'd probably jump out of a plane, but that's a little too close to the Banff bear for me. But yeah, I would say like anything in the mountains. Wheels, how about you?
I got a list, man. I guess so many things like that.
Being
up close at concerts, huge sporting events, being at a World Series game, being at a Stanley Cup Finals game, being at a College Bowl game, I mean, at the Olympics. Some of it, too, the Olympics was just Australia, and you're like, this is just crazy cool. You know, going to the petting zoo, and it's wallabies and kangaroos, not goats. Kind of a neat thing. Being in Paris was like that. Being in Italy, some of those places, like being in Venice, you're just like, what? Like, this is crazy that it's this and it's old and you know, it's beyond what you expect, I think, when you go to those places, because you hear the legends and you're like, it's not going to be as cool as all that. And you get there, you're like, dang, it's even better. So lumping it all together, traveling to cool places, big sporting event. I mean, I am the adrenaline junkie, so. The crowds at those places get the adrenaline going and get you going into it.
Is it interesting or is it a big duh that everything we're saying is outside of our normal lives?
I think it's kind of the duh.
I mean, a normal thing for me, I mean, would be running. Like, there's something to just, you're just going as hard as you can in a workout. And then, like, in a marathon, when you are on that starting line and, you know, being toward the front and there's 30,000 people behind you and you feel the energy and you're like, the next 2.5 hours, the next 3 hours are going to hurt like any, like, I don't know if I'm up to the task. And then you go and you're trying not to get trampled because all you're with all the fast people, the half and the full, are all going out. And literally in Houston, the biggest thing is do not get trampled, because there are guys going out in Houston at 4:30 pace for the half marathon, you know, 5 minute pace for the half marathon. So you're just running, and then you're, the pain you feel and the emotions, and people are yelling and you feel euphoria, and then you feel crushed because you're like, I can't keep going. I will say, as far as like a lifetime of emotions condensed into a couple of hours and just being physically exhausted, but at your physical peak, but then literally collapsing, that's insane. That is hard to replicate.
I would never compare getting a tattoo to running a marathon. They're two very different things. But I remember the first tattoo I got was a fairly big one, and Nick had already had a couple tattoos, and he said, when you're done, you're going to feel like such a badass. And it was true. And everyone who has a tattoo, whether it's a little tiny name or it's a big giant piece on their back, they earned that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And
paid the price of pain.
Paid the price. And there's something about being in the middle of one and doing, especially if it's something that you really want, it's really meaningful, that it also kind of heightens your awareness and you feel a little more alive.
Well, they always say that they're addictive. You get one, you want more.
Yeah. It releases something.
Yeah. So is it the pain part, or is it the fact you've done it, combination of all of it?
Yeah. The combination of all of it. Yeah.
Just trying to chase that again?
Yeah. Yeah. What's Andrew, how about you? Oh, sorry. Well, Ron, just the Chicago family.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Keeping
and fantasizing about Amy's death.
Honestly, keeping that from all of you.
Hey, he says it, not me.
A little dark.
Keeping that family from all of you has been so challenging.
Makes
what
you
about,
feel alive.
What about every time you click donate to the big Republican super PACs?
Oh, because I'm secretly a Republican donor?
Yeah.
Mega donor. Right. Mm-hmm. Andrew?
I can't think of anything.
Oh, stop it.
I'm for real. I mean, I haven't like done a lot of like super exciting things in my life. I've never really like traveled much, or I don't run marathons. I don't do like exciting, you know, I don't skydive or anything like that. I don't know.
It's time for a tattoo then, my friend.
Yeah, buddy.
I'm not even being sarcastic, but don't you kind of get into it when you're competeting in magic or anything like that? Like, as I feel that way sometimes.
I guess. I guess if you want to define it in that way, I guess competition does make me feel, you know, I enjoy competing in general.
Yeah.
In just about anything that I would compete in. And it does feel good.
I wish I could have that sentence tattooed on my arm. I enjoy competing in anything I compete in.
Whatever it might be, I enjoy it.
I guess.
Whatever should
the
come
part up. I love most about competing is the competition.
It's just doing it. It's just being there and doing it.
I kind of think that makes sense, though. I feel that.
Yeah, like, I just mean, I like, whatever might come up. Even when we, like, play games here, I like competing in it, and I like the feeling of winning. It's a good feeling. Or even, you know, even just doing it feels good.
What's your best victory ever?
Oh, boy. I don't know. I don't have any, like, one that I would hang on. They all feel about the same in terms of, like, how good. It just feels good to win.
I saw a
sometimes
video.
Sometimes you want to go, ha-ha, in your face, but you don't do that. That's not nice.
Are you like the Magnus Carlsen of what you do?
I love it.
I don't know what he does, so
chess,
I don't know.
Chess
I know
master.
He plays chess, but I don't know what he
well,
is as
okay,
a person.
Well, okay, so I saw a video of him the other day of him showing up like 25 minutes late or something to his little match.
Mm-hmm.
And
his little match.
It was a big deal.
The world championship. His little match.
It was a big deal. And I thought, I wonder if that's how Andrew felt when he rolled into that game and the guy said, you are tardy, playa.
Oh, when I was 2 minutes late because I was going to the bathroom? Yeah, probably about the same.
Yeah.
I love the guy said,
you are tardy, player.
Yeah, it's like,
tardy.
What are we,
you
kindergarten?
And I was so done because I was already, like, I was far enough behind that I knew I wasn't going to win in the tournament or even really, like, prize out or anything. So I was, like, already going to quit. I was just doing it because I'd already paid the entry. So I'm like, what? Just do whatever you're going to. Come on, man. Like, don't get in my face. Because he wanted, like, an excuse. He was like, are you sure you don't want to try to, you know, excuse this penalty? I'm like, I don't care. Get out of my face.
So, Wheels, when I was in sixth grade, we had a wrestling team. And we had a meet at the high school. So I'd never been to the high school before. And all the other grammar schools that we were competing with were wearing wrestling singlets, and we were wearing jeans and white wife beater t-shirts.
All right.
So it gives you kind of the feel for it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had four matches, and I got thrashed in all four. I got pinned in all four in seconds.
That's clearly the uniform.
Yeah. And so then after competing, we went running around and we went into the locker room and there's the jacuzzi, right? And then we go back into the wrestling arena and the coach goes, "Get out there. They called your name for the award. Get out there."
Oh.
So I go running out there and I get a standing ovation.
Oh, no.
Because I'm late. And I'm picking up my prize for last place, for fourth place. I still have the little green ribbon. But I thought I had won because I'm stupid. And so I'm out there, and I think this is pre-Rocky, but I'm doing the Rocky. I have my fists up, and the crowd's just getting whipped into a frenzy because of what a little idiot this kid is. And so then I go back, and my coach was the first person other than my dad to ever say the F word to me. He goes, "You got F in last place, idiot." And I'm just, yeah, I know. I know.
But was it there were only four contestants? Man.
Yeah, in your weight class.
In your weight class. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you were literally, okay.
I was literally last place.
What do you think? There's anybody in the crowd that thought you were leaning into it and just.
They might have.
You know?
You might have.
That guy's funny.
Yeah.
Look
because,
at him.
Because I was so sincere.
Right.
Oh, I hate that. I hate when people abuse or disrespect sincerity and people do that to kids. It makes me so sad.
It was rough.
I hate that.
Also, I put that on organizers too. Like, don't give out a last place thing. Like, don't do that. Don't put the attention on someone like that.
Well, what they had done is they gave out first, second, third.
Right.
And then they're like, Dave Glover, one more time for Dave Glover. Okay, Dave's not here. And then I walked in, they're like, get out there. Then everyone's like, oh, here comes that Dave Glover kid. Ah, yeah. You know.
So even in the 70s, they're giving out trophies to everybody.
Participation trophy.
I thought that was a thing only in modern times.
Yeah, I got one.
I know. I got them too. I used to get them at the end of Little League season. Everybody got a little. Look at you! You played Little League.
Yeah, we didn't get that.
We didn't get those.
Yeah,
I got them. That's all I got. But I got them.
You played Little League?
I did.
Nice. I didn't know.
Boy,
that.
I was the worst player on the team, and I'm not exaggerating. I was the worst player on the team. There is a videotape somewhere at my parents' house of me. The news had come out to film our game just for a little, you know, a couple little B-roll shots talking about Little League. And there is a shot where it's just a shot of the field and no one else is in the shot except my father and I meet in the center of the shot so that he can hand me my glove because I had gone out to the field and just left my glove on the bench. I had gone out to the outfield and just dropped the glove on the bench. Like, I'm not going to need that.
Was this when you were still beautiful and had the long hair? Like, you were the...
I don't remember how long the hair was. It was in the hair era. I don't remember if I had the hair at the time. But, yeah. And they left that shot in. I guess they thought it was a good-looking shot. They left it in the news.
Heartwarming.
Our worst player on our little league team, year after year, who's currently in prison for setting a man on fire.
Okay.
He couldn't catch a ball to save his life, but he was that kid that could do like backflips and stuff.
Oh, really?
Yes. And that's so awesome. Every time the ball was hit in his direction, he just started doing backflips. He didn't even try to put a glove on the ball. I loved it. Yes. I thought it was the best.
And that's the one thing I wanted to do because of Ozzie Smith. I wanted to be able to do backflips. Mm. When I was a kid.
Did you try?
No. Come on.
The other thing is that I would be on the base, and somebody would, like, hit the ball, right? And then everybody would, and, like, the coaches, all the other players, all the parents, they'd be screaming at me, like, go run! Run! The other guy can't go to the base if you're still on it! And I would just be, like, not paying attention. And just, like, looking around at the clouds or whatever, not knowing. We lost, like, a bunch of games because of me.
There was a kid on my team.
But I still got ice cream and soda after the game.
Yeah, there we go. And a trophy.
Who really won here?
I may have told you, but there was a kid on my team who was huge, and his head was so big that we didn't have a helmet big enough. You know how everybody shared the helmets?
Yeah.
And our team's colors were like blue and black, but the only helmet big enough they could find was red. So this this poor guy had to wear this big red helmet, and it was just his helmet.
It's accentuated.
He wasn't good at baseball. I'll tell you what, though. He went on to be an offensive lineman at Wisconsin.
There you go.
He was good in football.
All through the night.
So I don't understand much about anything, but it strikes me as interesting that it seems that no one is willing to take a loss but consumers. And I'm thinking about the eggs. That bird flu, no one's fault. Bird flu's just decimating the chicken population, and they're not laying as many eggs. There aren't as many chickens. They're, you know, dying by the millions. And rather than the egg producers going, wow, this is going to suck, they just charge double or triple. And then they make it to the grocery stores, and the grocery stores are like, this is ridiculous. This is going to suck. We're going to double our prices, too. You feel me? Like, I know that's just basic economics, but there's just something inherently wrong to me that no one can take a loss. Because I'm so stupid, if I were an egg farmer and my chickens died, I would feel like, well, I'm out of business. I'm losing my money. I wouldn't think, oh, I'll just charge the same price as if I had all these eggs. Just kind of gets to me. You feel stupid.
I mean, there's no question that the masses are the ones taken advantage of in all of these things. Right? I mean, it's those types of things.
Does that go all the way back?
Probably. You know, yeah. used to have to work, what were those, serfs? Used to be a serf working for a lord, and you just, you know, pass all your money up the food chain, and if you don't like it, well, put you to the sword.
They're always expecting to, I guess, you privatize the profits, you publish, you know, everything else.
Yeah.
The losses are public, though. Like, we all have to be on the hook for it. I think what is interesting right now is that with this, with what Dave's talking about, why is nobody complaining about it? We're just done complaining about high prices because the election's over? Is it not still a problem? Are we not still demanding the prices come down? How come we've stopped doing that?
Do we have an answer for that? Because everything's fixed now.
Half the country thinks so, and the other half is exhausted.
Yeah, nothing's getting fixed. I mean, like, it doesn't matter. You know, like, this dynamic's not going away. I mean, I went on my rant yesterday about how the wealthiest people in the world get away without paying income tax because they just don't pay themselves income. They take stock. They take out loans against that stock, so they have cash to spend, and they're low-interest loans that we can't get because we don't have the assets that they do, and they're just gaming the system. I mean, it's the same idea.
And we, or at least me, feel superior because I don't do that.
Because you have morals.
But maybe I'm just dumb.